And away we go. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you in the driver's seat and riding along on the other side of the glass.
In shotgun.
Yeah, Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show. You know how unusual this is when you look at the seven-day forecast through next Wednesday. Here we are coming up to the middle part of June. There is not one 100 in that forecast.
That's fine with me.
Yeah, me too. Just haven't seen that in a long time. And as they say, I didn't get off the bus yesterday here in Tucson, 12 and a half years with the radio project in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio as part, which is part of, the growing Bustos Media Tucson footprint here in Tucson. There are now, soon to be, five radio stations under one roof here at Bustos Media. But this particular radio station is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice, trusted news and talk, worldwide live listening, on my website, buckmastershow.com, and of course, kvoi.com. And we have all of the content going back to when we started the show in January 2011, all archived for you. Very simple to use format at buckmastershow.com. When we do our telephonic interviews, the Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to the vice chairman of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. He is a Democrat representing District Number 1 on the five-member board, Rex Scott. Supervisor Scott, how are you today?
Bill, having a great day so far, and I hope the same is true for you, Tom, and all your listeners.
All right. Let's begin with it. We have a lot to unpack today with Rex Scott in the next couple of segments. Let's talk first about the public input section of the Pima County Board of Supervisors meetings. There are going to be changes. What will those changes entail, Supervisor?
So, Bill, what the board approved on Tuesday is that beginning at our next meeting, which is on June 20, public comment will be limited to 1 hour unless a majority of the board votes to extend it. If we have more than 20 speakers who sign up asking to speak, then individual speaker time will be reduced from 3 minutes to 2 minutes. Those are the two changes that we made. And it's important to point out that prior to this, the board had no limits on the total amount of time allotted to public comment.
What are you saying to those that say this is really violating people's free speech?
Well, I don't think that that's the case, especially given that these changes do not preclude anybody from coming to speak to the board. In fact, they will allow more people to speak if we have a significant number of speakers signing up. But what we saw in recent months was that officers and precinct representatives of the Pima County Republican Party were taking coordinated, orchestrated action to make use of this time to get their own messaging out. In other words, they were using a public meeting for their own partisan ends. And the changes that we've put in place don't preclude these Republican activists from coming to the meeting, but it will prevent them from monopolizing the time as they have been during the last several months. Call to the public is when the board is calling to the public to share its input and ideas with the board. It is not a town hall. It is not a venue in which political parties are supposed to use that time to get out their own partisan messaging. And every other elected body in the county, the cities and towns, the school districts, Pima Community College, all have limits not just on the total amount of public comment time, but also on individual speaker time. And now Pima County has those in place, but it doesn't limit public. It doesn't limit anybody's ability to speak to us. And I am certainly somebody who believes in reaching out to the public and hearing from them. I've had 9 town halls in my district since I was elected. I meet with any community group that asks to meet with me. I know my 4 colleagues get out into their districts a lot as well. People can ask for meetings with individual supervisors. They can write to the board through a variety of means. So frankly, I think for partisan activists to suddenly become free speech warriors when there are limits being placed on their efforts to use a public meeting for their partisan ends is a little ridiculous.
The vote was 3-2. Supervisors Bronson and Christie voting against this. Supervisor Christie is the lone Republican, the sole Republican on the board. He said the call to the audience wouldn't pose an issue if it had not been for Supervisor Dr. Matt Hines' irresponsible behavior, pointing to that time during the peak of COVID when the supervisor and hospital physician, which he is, interrupted speakers by who are providing vaccine disinformation. What do you say to your colleague, Supervisor Christie?
Well, Bill, I have a longstanding policy that I do not talk to or talk about my colleagues on the radio or through the media. But so if I have anything to say to Supervisor Christie, I'll say it to him directly. What I will tell you is that the people from the local Republican Party who have been coming to our meetings address us on a wide variety of topics. Some of them are directly related to board activity, and some of them are related to their views on state and national issues.
And then we have the Pima County Republican chair. His name is Dave Smith. And he has been urging his members to come out now and protest this. But you feel, how will it work? If someone comes and wants to speak to the board, do they sign up in advance when they arrive at the supervisor's chambers?
That's correct. And it's important to point out that Chairman Smith has been urging his officers and precinct representatives to come to our meetings and speak on a variety of topics ever since he was elected to be the county chair. That's definitely the time dating back to January when we saw an increase in the number of Republican activists seeking to make orchestrated use of this time. But yeah, that's the way it works with call to the public. You fill out a green speaker card and you give it to a staff member from the clerk's office. All of those green speaker cards are given to the board chair, and then the board chair calls people to the front during the call to the public segment of our agenda.
All right. Let's switch topics before we do take our first break of the show. County taxpayers are going to be end up shelling out about $3.7 million for 5 homes that are in an area, I believe, in your district, kind of the northwest area of Swan Road and Skyline. These are areas that are basically in harm's way from flooding, correct?
Yes, Bill. The county has had, since the 1983 floods that caused so much damage in our community, has had a program that is known as the Flood Prone Land Acquisition Program. And anytime there are homes that are in the floodplain, and it's important to point out that these homes that we're referring to were built during a time when there wasn't even a flood control district, much less floodplain regulations. We purchased those homes, we demolished them, and that allows the floodplain to flow more naturally, which not only is good in terms of the natural progress of floodwaters, but it also mitigates against damage to other properties. These five properties are in the Coronado Foothills Estates neighborhood, which is in the Catalina Foothills, as you said, north of the intersection. It's actually north of the intersection of Pontotoc and Sunrise. And that neighborhood is built, some of the homes right in the floodplain for the Finger Rock Wash. And the Finger Rock Wash experienced heavy flows during the last two monsoon seasons. Those flows were definitely exacerbated by the Bighorn Fire and the burn scar left from the Bighorn Fire that caused the Finger Rock Wash to flow even more severely. So all those homes are being purchased using the funds from this program. Again, this program has been in place since the 1980s, and the county has used it to purchase dozens of properties over the last several decades that are in flood-prone areas.
And when you look at the history of this particular Coronado Foothills Estate subdivision, at one point, I think there were like 56 homes that were allowed to be built within the floodplain of the Finger Rock Wash. And this, of course, goes back before the 1980s, before there were really any regulations. So
Exactly. It
was really, in many ways, Rex Scott, building a house on sand.
I think that's a very fair description. And the people who built the neighborhood back in the 1960s could not have anticipated what we've seen in terms of the increased activity of that wash ever since the Bighorn Fire, but they certainly could have known where they were, that they were building near a floodplain. However, there were no regulations of the sort that we have now that would have prevented them from building that subdivision. And no, I think not just in Pima County, but around the world, we learn lessons about Mother Nature and her steadfast willingness to to reclaim her land when we build in places that we shouldn't have built. And the flood-prone land acquisition program is a way of acknowledging the mistakes that we made and not deferring to Mother Nature when we made those mistakes.
All right. Before we do take the break, we had a comment from a listener about this new call to the audience policy, and the listener was trying to recall, did the board ever meet over at the Tucson Convention Center, the TCC? Was there a different venue? Do you recall anything like that?
You know, I've only been on the board since January of 2021.
Yeah.
But I don't recall that ever happening. I believe the Tucson City Council has had public meetings at the TCC before. I don't recall the board ever doing that.
All right. We're going to take a break right here. Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott, he represents District 1 on the five-member Pima County Board of Supervisors. We've got Rex Scott for another segment, segment 2, coming up. It's the Buckmaster Show on a Thursday. By the way, tomorrow we have the top guy at the City of Tucson at City Hall as far as the city manager's office is concerned. Mike Ortega will be with us here talking about the recently approved City of Tucson budget. Take the break right now. Back with Rex Scott in a moment. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006. and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Just visiting with Tom during the break. Not that I wasn't listening to our fine commercials and our wonderful sponsors, but Tom pointed out how very unusual this weather is. Two 100-degree days so far this year, and the difference. Now, this one I do know, Tom. I think it was April, and then we had another one recently, and I think it might have been one of the longest spells between two 100-degree days this time of year. But anyway, it's very unusual. We'll take it. The mornings have just been absolutely spectacular. Let's continue now on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Rex Scott, Pima County Supervisor, representing District Number 1, that's the Foothills area and some other areas in the Northwest, including the area where the Buckmasters reside. Rex Scott is the Vice Chair of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. What do you think of this spending plan? It's a $1.8 billion budget that Pima County, you and your colleagues, are set to adopt on June 20th.
Bill, one of the things that I've genuinely appreciated about the way County Administrator Lesher and her team have been handling the budget is that even though spring is budget season, we started talking about the budget back in the fall. And the board has put together a number of policies with regard to ensuring an appropriate fund balance so that our credit rating is always excellent, which it has been for many years. And we also have asked the county administrator and her team to put together a budget that has four major focus areas. One is doing what we can to make the county more of an employer of choice, because like a lot of public sector entities, we're dealing with a lot of employee vacancies, critical infrastructure, because not only in terms of providing the services and supports that our constituents need, but infrastructure is always what businesses are looking at when they're seeking to expand or relocate into Pima County. Financial stability, making sure that the county's financial status is outstanding and that we're not imposing any more of a tax burden than we need to on our constituents, and also justice and law enforcement, because public safety and ensuring public safety is one of the most important goals of county government. And I really think that going back into the fall and the iterative process that Ms. Lesher and her team went through in terms of determining base budgets for all of the departments, considering any supplemental requests that departments made, and not just the departments under her authority, but also the departments that are headed up by the independently elected officials like the sheriff and treasurer and assessor. But I also think it's important to point out that we have inflation contingency funds that we are using vacancy savings to keep the tax burden lower, that we are looking at the long-term stability of the PAYGO program that funds all of our infrastructure needs, including our road repair and maintenance programs. So I think this is a well-developed and thoughtful fiscal document. And I think anybody who's been following the board's activity since the fall knows that the board and county administration has been working on these issues for the last several months. So I voted for tentative adoption, and I intend to vote for full adoption as well.
Let's get an update before you leave on the RTA, the Regional Transportation Authority. You are the representative from Pima County on the seven-member board, or is it nine? Nine-member board. What is the latest on the RTA Next program?
Well, when we met last, which was on May 25th, we heard a presentation from not just the Citizens Advisory Committee, but also from the Technical Management Committee, which is made up of the jurisdictional professionals who advise the Citizens Advisory Committee on the RTA Next plan that will eventually come to the RTA board for our review and approval and to begin the public input process. In fact, your guest tomorrow, Mr. Ortega, is one of the representatives on that Technical Management Committee, as are County Administrator Lesher and Deputy County Administrator Carmine DeBonis for the county. We were really pleased, the board was, to hear how the Technical Management Committee and the Citizens Advisory Committee are working together to get a RTA Next plan to us for our review by this summer. They have a July 1st deadline. The board itself does not meet again until late July, so if they go a little past that deadline, that's not going to be crucial, but all indications are that they are going to meet that goal, and then the RTA board will approve what's submitted to us, review and eventually approve what's submitted to us, and then we'll also go into the extensive public comment period that people who were here in 2006 will be familiar with experiencing.
All right, and we'll have more on that after the mid-show break. General Ted Maxwell of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council will be with me in studio. And of course, General Maxwell is the Arizona Department of Transportation representative on the nine-member regional RTA board. So we'll also hear what General Maxwell has to say about the RTA. So in summary here, as we get ready to wrap up this fiscal year, you think, Rex Scott, the county's in pretty darn good shape?
I think we're in excellent shape. And although we are dealing with another year of state cost shifts The state of Arizona has shifted what amounts to 27% of our general fund primary property tax rate, $112 million to county taxpayers. That's $16 million more than last year. And we do have a policy in place that does account for those cost shifts in the determination of the overall property tax rate. I'm pleased to tell county taxpayers that the overall property tax rate is the second lowest in the last 10 fiscal years. So I think we are ensuring that we can have all the resources to provide our constituents the services and supports that they depend upon, but we're doing it in a prudent and very fiscally sound way.
All right. Supervisor Rex Scott, thank you for joining us. We'll look forward to your next visit with us in the month of July. In the meantime, the best to you and your family.
Bill, the same to you and to Ann, thinking about both of you.
Thank you very much. All right. We're going to take our break right now. General Maxwell's with me in studio right after the, we'll speak with the general right after this break.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. We love Green Things. Everything for the garden is over there at 3384 East River Road. This is a perfect time of year. Tom and I were talking earlier, Tom Fairbanks, about the unusual, relatively cool weather that we've been having. I mean, we love it, but I think I don't speak for the my plants, but they kind of seem happy. So, I mean, this is a great time of year to put some color in the in the garden, in the ground, in anticipation of our rainy season, which some of our weather guy that we have regularly on the show, Zach Guido from the University of Arizona, kind of thinking a delayed summer monsoon because of the cooler weather. Anyway, greenthingsaz.com is their website. They're in their 53rd year of business. Open daily. Their sister business, zocalovillage.com. And when we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, it's always a pleasure to welcome General Ted Maxwell back to the program. Ted leads up Southern Arizona Leadership Council, where he is the president and CEO. He's been in that position since 2018. So that's 5 years. His nearly 34 years of military service includes 15 years in active duty with the Air Force, an additional 19 in the Arizona Air National Guard. He retired as a major general in 2018. His final military position was commander, Arizona Air National Guard. Now, in 2021, Governor Ducey appointed the general to represent Pima County on the 7-member Arizona State Transportation Board, and so he becomes, as the ADOT representative, he represents the State Transportation Board on the 9-member Regional Transportation Authority Board of Directors. In addition, Ted, are you, first of all, Ted, great to see you.
It's good to see you, Bill, as always.
Are you still involved serving on the Governor's Water Augmentation Innovation and Conservation Council?
No, Bill, that council has been dissolved.
Okay.
Governor Hobbs has established another council, Water Council, that is also very well represented from Southern Arizona.
All right.
Sharon Magdahl and many other water.
Oh, sure.
Folks who actually know a lot more about water than I do are on that committee now.
Well, you know a lot about a lot of things, and we're going to talk about some of those things. First of all, it was great to have you and Ben Buehler-Garcia. You guys did a full hour, I think.
We did. We did a full hour,
Bill.
It was a great conversation.
We're down in the Caribbean, Puerto Rico, and St. Martin, so...
Maybe you brought some of that cool weather back with you.
Me? Well, I don't know. Puerto Rico was pretty. San Juan is like 95 on a daily high.
And it's humid.
And I made a vow. That's it for San Juan and Puerto Rico. When you can go to Hawaii, where the high is going to be about 85, like 10 degrees cooler than pretty much most of the Caribbean. The Caribbean, I don't know if it's the climate change, but we've been going there for like 30 years, and it's gotten hotter.
Yeah. Well, that brings the humidity too, and that's
and the humidity.
A dry heat can still be hot.
Yep.
But it's dry, and it's definitely.
So you and Ben, I know, talked a little bit about the legislative session. Why don't we begin by saying that this is an unusual session. Normally, the governor signs a budget, and everybody goes home for the session ends. It's different this year.
It is, and I think there's a lot of things playing into it. You know, remember, generally, in the history of Arizona, it's been a single party that controlled both the executive branch as well as the legislative branch. And this year is the first one in quite a while since Governor Napolitano, that we've got a situation where the executive branch is controlled by the Democrat Party and the legislators controlled by the Republican Party. And there's, as with all of our politics right now, there's not always a lot of trust there going back and forth. So there's a lot of different reasons. The latest I've heard is, you know, there was a rumor last week swirling that they were going to stay in session till October, which makes no sense. Because remember, all the new laws don't go into effect till 90 days after the session's over.
Sure.
So everything they have passed, which is a significantly reduced number of bills than normal, because, you know, over 100 have now been vetoed as well.
Mm-hmm. Is that a record or close? Governor Napolitano also vetoed a lot.
She vetoed a lot, and I think she's blown by that. I think it really is. I think this is significantly higher. But that, you know, that prolongs a lot of things. There's been discussion that it's about director nominations, and there's some concern that they're going to be making some nominations that the Senate would want to immediately address because of it. But they'll be back in session in January. The latest rumor I heard just yesterday is that they may stay in till August, because they've got some things. They're definitely coming back next week. Mm-hmm. We know that there's some issues that they're going to address on infrastructure, including the Maricopa Regional Infrastructure Plan is one of the ones that's going to be discussed. There's some other ones with some additional funding inside the legislature or the transportation and infrastructure world. Tough to address after the budget's already been signed, though. So we'll see where they go. I believe the issues they're taking on are not budget dependent. They're revenue dependent on things that come from other fees and that are throughout the state. Also hearing rumors of maybe a couple election related issues. The one about the publishing of the ballot images is probably going to come back up. I've heard some that there's some of the ones that will change some of the restrictions or requirements for some type of elections we can have in the future may come up. You know, some of those are going to definitely face vetoes if they get up to the governor's office as well. But we're hearing maybe August now. It, to me, one of the challenges they have, they can't really do what I'd call full-scale fundraising for their campaigns as long as they're in session. They're prohibited who they can raise funds from during session, because that would be perceived as, you give me a donation and maybe this bill will turn in your favor. But so they can't do it as long as they're in session. And the House, the members of the House, most of them are first-termers, and they need to go out and raise some funds for their next electionary. That's the advantage of being an incumbent. You can raise funds for 2 years knowing you're going to run again.
So technically, the 2023 session has not adjourned.
Oh, it has not adjourned. They have not signed and died yet. That normally is, like you said, they do the budget, they pass the budget bills, and then they sign and die.
Because they have not adjourned, as you say, they can continue on. We have a budget.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's generally a defining moment. You have to have a budget before you leave.
Exactly. I've not seen it. I can't recall. And I've been around for 35 years here in the state. I can't see anything like this.
No, it's been quite a while. And it's one of those ones that I think what we're hearing is they'll probably be in session next week, maybe stay on for a second week, and then they'll go into another long recess. There are intermittent, even though they're in recess, they can have the committee meetings. As you know, the governor's director to run the prison system was approved the other day on an actual 5-0 vote, despite a pretty contentious committee. But that committee is continuing to meet to continue to do some of those reviews of the governor's nominees for some of the director positions.
How about getting on the November ballot? What's going to get on the ballot out of this session?
Well, nothing comes out of this session on the November ballot.
But because for 24.
Anything they put, that's got to go to 24. They've forwarded a lot of them. They're not at the point yet of having made that decision which ones they're going to send forward. It's one thing that's unique about the HCRs and the SCRs is they can pass those resolutions, but they don't have to necessarily act on them. And so generally leadership will wait to make the decisions of which ones they're going to go forward with to the 24 ballot. And the irony of it, Bill, is they can also come back in next year's session and undo any of those ones
that they
were going to forward. Yeah. So I think there's a long way to know before we'll know what that 24 ballot will look like. What we do know is it will have a lot of issues on it.
Transportation-wise, this legislative session, did they make any movement about I-10?
They did. They brought in, they have allocated another $89 million. Now, remember, last year there was $400 million,
yes.
And we had asked for $350 million in a mega grant from the federal government, which we did not receive.
Mm-hmm.
So the estimates, it's be about $700, $750 million that's needed to complete I-10 to three lanes, effectively from Tucson to Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
So we've now got just under $500 million. ADOT is planning on going back for another mega grant, but a much smaller one, probably in the $125 to $150 million
range. That
sounds
pretty doable.
I think it will be. What we missed on the last one was by putting in $350 million. There's only $1 billion to go around completely, and there was only two other super mega grants, which are the ones over $250 million, that they authorized.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a much more competitive field, and it's got to be, I'd say, in a lot of ways, a lot more global in who it's going to impact. This one, because it's a freeway, a highway system, we know the impact it has, but it's not as obvious to folks back in D.C. So I think by going for the smaller amount, we increase the chance of getting that, and we're confident that if we can get that, then we can get the I-10 completion, as we like to say, underway.
Any other items about Southern Arizona from this legislative session that are of note?
Well, there's been a lot of movement on trying to, as you're aware, there is a campaign going on right now locally to put a citizens initiative for ward only on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been also been a lot of activity up at the legislature focused around the election system inside the city of Tucson. Matter of fact, focused around the charter cities as a whole, but I don't think that's going to get any any traction. But there is some potential traction that one of Senator Wadsack's bills that she's running that would effectively put to the statewide voters the ability to limit the type of elections a different municipality of various sizes could have. Now, you know, we'll see how the leagues of cities and towns would address that. But again, it would still be going onto the ballot in 2024. So that's gotten a lot of attention. You know, and SLC is an organization that we do believe that the ward-only system would be best for direct representation because the current system doesn't have that. So we'll see where those go. But those have really been the biggest ones. And obviously anything to have to do with water and infrastructure impacts us.
All right, we're going to talk about the regional transportation update with Ted Maxwell right after we take a break. It's Buckmaster on a Thursday. And again, we've got Mike Ortega, the city manager, with us for the full hour tomorrow on our Friday Focus interview. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane in North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Thursday edition. This portion presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. If it's cool here in Tucson, which it's relatively cool, mid-90s, look at Silver City. My goodness. Upper 70s, 77 right now over in Silver City, New Mexico, one of our great sponsors. Find out more about what to do over there. There's all sorts of recreation opportunities. Log on to their website, southwestnewmexico.org. And again, it's only about a three-hour drive to a really beautiful environment, about a mile high elevation over there. Something different, beautiful part of the land of enchantment. We continue now with our conversation with General Ted Maxwell, who wears many hats. He represents Pima County on the 7-member Arizona State Transportation Board. He's also the State Transportation Board representative on the 9-member Regional Transportation Authority Board, known as the RTA. And of course, the RTA is going to be sunsetting. This first 20-year program will be ending in a few years. So General Maxwell, where are we in the process of what has been come to be known as RTA Next?
Well, Bill, we're still at the point where we're developing the initial draft plan. And the key point of that is it's a draft plan. As when the plan gets put together, we have a long 6 to 9 month period where we take it out to the public and we get public input. And I think people have forgotten. It's been 20 years. So the last time in 2005, when they were building up for the vote in 2006, they had over 200 meetings with the citizens to get their input on what they thought. This time around, it's a little more challenging, mainly because we've taken care of a lot of the roads and the infrastructure needed to start improving our cross town and cross regional traffic. And there's a much bigger drive this time by folks saying we need more transit, of some sort, whether it's light rail, bus, rapid transit, issues mm-hmm. along those lines. And if you look at what Maricopa is struggling with right now, that is where they're struggling because they're about to go for their third reauthorization of their regional transportation plan.
Third 20-year renewal. Okay.
And they're transportation plan was kind of like ours in the first one. A lot of roadways, a lot of, now mm-hmm. they built freeways, built a lot of them, built a lot of loops. It's driven their economic growth significantly. And then as the second one came around, they put a little bit more. They had a lot of focus on light rail and transit. And now the third one, that's where you've got the politicians that are playing into it and trying. There's some that don't want any light rail or, transit. There's others that want it to be majority light rail and transit. Mm-hmm. We're facing some of those discussions, and they've been some of the challenges on the Citizens Advisory Committee. One of my concerns about if you overseed the amount of transit and money into one of the pots is you're going to run into a position where you become reliant on it.
Right.
And if that source ever goes away, you're in trouble. And if Prop 400 doesn't pass for Maricopa, their light rail system and their transit system are going to be significantly degraded and impacted because they've come to the point where it is the operational side. We mm-hmm. we talk a lot about in our meetings that we are not looking to fund operations. What we're looking to fund is the capital investment and infrastructure needed to create a system, a regional system that will allow all citizens to have a better chance of being able to move smoothly, freely, and in a timely manner across, whether it's across one side of Tucson to the other, 246 square miles, pretty big city. Mm-hmm. But we've also got the concerns of Oro Valley, Marana, Sarita, where they're talking about trying to get to this region in a lot of ways, to the heart of our region, to do their business or their entertainment or their, or just their daily lives. So we're in a challenge there. But what I'll tell you is I've seen a lot of progress that Supervisor Scott mm-hmm. talked about it earlier. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good hard work being done between members of the TMC and the chairs of the CAC to try to come to an agreement of where we can get. Part of it's just understanding things. Like we've got transit projects that are listed on the on the named projects thing. And everybody goes, oh, those are all roadways. Those are all roadways. Well, some are being done specifically to improve the efficiency of transit, but we don't show that in the transit element. So people go, there's not enough money there. Well, there is. It's just, so I'll be curious to see if they start putting some of these projects into the different elements, because mm-hmm. we've got our named projects, and then we've got administrative, transit, safety, active transportation, which is really, sidewalks, greenways, mm-hmm. bike paths, and then the environmental element. Those are the elements we currently have. They may change, too, because they're considering modernization and technology and some other elements there as well. But what sometimes we forget is often these projects that are the named projects, they do a lot of things. Yeah. To include maintenance, the last board meeting, we discussed is, can we have dollars for maintenance in the plan? And the short answer is not when you think of potholes and you know, quick mill and fills and doing things to smooth out issues that come up.
Mm-hmm.
But in a lot of way, you look at what's happened on Broadway, what's happened on Speedway and Grant, why those were not maintenance projects. They really mm-hmm. were capital maintenance, because mm-hmm. by rebuilding the road, you now have a brand new road that right. all the old potholes, mm-hmm. problems, cracks, mm-hmm. degradation of the mm-hmm. pavement has been fixed.
Yeah.
But through a project that either brought modernization mm-hmm. or expansion to mm-hmm. our ability to get across town.
It's going to be an interesting process to try to sell this. And I point to this pretty much overwhelming the citizens of Tucson saying no to Tucson Electric Power. It's just kind of an undercurrent, I feel, that many in the electorate right now have this distrust of governmental entities.
You're definitely onto one. Yes, there's a lot of distrust depending on whose side you trust and who's in charge.
Yeah.
That's one. But I think what you're seeing more and more, and we've talked about it, you know, the mm-hmm. political spectrum is not really a linear thing. It's more of a circle. And when you get on what you saw on the Prop 412 for the franchise fee agreement, was you saw one side, the climate change, you know, mm-hmm. supporters say it's not enough, we want it. And you saw the other side saying, don't be taxing us more for something we shouldn't be paying taxes for.
Exactly.
And so you had both sides saying no. It
yeah.
is so much easier in our society to say no mm-hmm. than to say yes. That's
yeah.
why building the right plan and then doing the right public outreach will be so critical
mm-hmm.
because I do believe to our economic environment and our quality of life, if we don't reauthorize the RTA, it's going to have a significant negative impact.
Mm-hmm. So consensus will be so very important with this.
Because
just like you saw with the climate people saying there wasn't enough with the TEP agreement, you could see the transit, the people that want more transit with RTA saying there's not enough.
Absolutely true, and I think you will see that. And the irony is, I've spoke to the Citizens Advisory Committee. I told them, I will know you have a good plan when you all don't like it.
Yes.
Because that means you all had to give something, and that means you all didn't get 100% of what you want, because we get so caught up in what we want. We sometimes lose, and I won't say lose the big perspective. Everybody that's there is volunteering their time,
yes.
their effort. They're committed to trying to make it better, but it's so easy nowadays to get caught up in this is what I think's best, and this is what you think's best, and we don't fundamentally agree.
All right, General Ted Maxwell. Ted, great to see you. Thank you, sir.
As always, Bill. Appreciate it.
All right, that'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. Again, tomorrow we've got Mike Ortega, Tucson City Manager, for our Friday Focus interview. And until then, on behalf of General Maxwell, Tom engineering and producing the show, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Hope everybody has a great afternoon.